With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's hit the ground running then, dude, because I believe you've got one straight after me, haven't you?
Yeah.
Chatting away. Carry the Fire, your brand new podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to talk to you about that, first
sure.
of all. It's fairly new, right? I checked the other day and there's like
five episodes in
as we talk. What was the genesis for that podcast as a, you know, an outlet for your creative thoughts? And
yeah, I don't remember where the idea first came from, but I... Once it kind of solidified, it just stuck in my head, and I ended up realizing I had to do it, or it was just going to bug me. But I just
not many musicians do them.
Way more really? Should.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you compare, say, music to comedy, like every comedian in the world has a podcast.
It's yeah, like. Yeah. They're used to talking though.
True.
And they're probably more entertaining on a podcast. But I think. I don't know. I had that feeling of like, oh man, everyone has a podcast. Why do you need to do one? But this idea was just stuck there. And the basic idea is just, you know, looking at the big questions of life through the lens of the good, the true, and the beautiful. And all that's to say is just, I'm trying to humanize, you know, the other, the person that's different than you, the different job or religion or background or whatever. Like, just letting you hear people talk about those things that really hold value to them, and also kind of through their specific, you know, their slant on things, whether they're a scientist or a musician or a philosopher or whatever. So I'm trying to make it really broad. So far we've had like a guy who's a Muslim. He's running for state senate in Virginia. He's a human rights lawyer. We just had Gerard Way on from My Chemical Romance, and
that's the one that I heard.
Umbrella Academy. Thanks. Had this guy Brian McDonald. He's like a story expert. We've had Hillary McBride. She's a therapist, researcher, and so yeah. I'm trying to make it really broad and just so that there's not something you're really expecting other than. I'm going to encounter a human today and hear what's important to them.
Well, I was just chatting to Dennis on the stairwell from Refused about this. And, you know, right now the world seems perhaps more divided than ever. And I know sometimes that the hype around separation can be taken, you know, out of context, but it does feel like we are splintered and fractured. And I think it's important to get back to what unites us all as humans, you know, despite what religion you are, what sexual orientation you are, you know, what you do for a living.
Yeah.
There's a lot of similarities. More
and there,
so than
and there I think that is the one kind of thread that runs through is I mean, everyone's not going to agree on everything, but I'm trying to have people on that are themselves open to the other, right? That are engaging common humanity in a loving way.
How's being a dad and how's that changed your life?
Being a dad's great. I've been a dad for 12 and a half years now. And I've got a 12-year-old, 9 and 8, all girls. And, I mean, It's super fun. It's getting, I mean, all the stages are really different and fun, but it's getting really fun where like my oldest is reading like books that I currently have just read or something. So we can, you know, shoot the shit on those.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Talk about it and
have book club.
I'll have like, I read it like a year and a half ago. And then she's like reminding me like, okay, where are you at now? Oh yeah. Yeah. That happened. That's cool. So that stuff's really fun. Yeah. They're rad.
How did you get on with your parents growing up? Did you have a good relationship, a healthy relationship with your mom and dad?
Yeah. I have like the worst memory too, but I...
Me too, dude. I'm glad I don't have to do what you do for,
but,
for a job.
Yeah, generally good. I don't know. It's hard because it's like that's just your experience. So mm-hmm. You don't really know what to compare it to either. So, but...
Did you feel like you had a fairly solid template of what's required from a parent going into that yourself, though?
I don't know. Like, my dad was pretty distant, I think just because he didn't know how to do that, and his parents didn't know how to do it. And so that's one thing that I love my dad, but I always wished, like, he knew how to connect better. But I feel like I connect really well with my kids. So I don't know what that switch would be, but
I think it's a generational thing, because I think that for a long time, men were taught to be kind of the strong, silent type, right? And perhaps not show emotion as much as is now more accepted and encouraged, which is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
And my dad was very much the same. And it is, it's always like you look and it goes back, doesn't it? Generations and generations and generations. There was never that one guy that changed the the narrative until hopefully, you know, our age group, our generation.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, that's probably the case.
How's the music industry changed in your time in that? Because I guess you guys would have caught the tail end of, you know, big advances and record sales being, you know, high numbers and the old school business still very much in place.
Kind of, yeah. We were at the tail end of that, and as we, like, you know, I was signed to a major or whatever, that was like the beginnings of the death throes of like the traditional system, like before streaming and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, we came up, you know, people make cassettes now, I guess, too, as like a fun old thing, but that was like, you'd make little cassettes to, give out at shows and sample your stuff or, I don't know. Yeah. It was just, I mean, there was no online promotion. That wasn't really how you got word out. That wasn't really a thing yet. So it was just all word of mouth, going to different record stores and trying to get them to put your demo on the end cap. And yeah, so we've seen all the changes since then, and everyone trying to figure out what the hell's going on. But I don't know. We just try to keep making good music and stay afloat. So we're not very deft at like actually navigating all that. We suck at social media and all that stuff. It's just not in our blood the way it is like the next generation or half generation. So I don't know. I use Twitter a lot, but I'm not good at like promoting on there. I don't know. Part of it's we're really private people. Like, we just keep to ourselves and
so I guess you no say one's what driven you want to say in
yeah,
the
no
art
one,
as
yeah,
well,
no
right?
one's driven to be like, I'm going to share this. It's hard for us.
Do you like read what other people are sharing on there, or is that side of it not, and you know, of any interest
like
to you
other
guys?
Bands?
Yeah, like, do you take note of other bands' posts or other voices
I mean, I love listening to a bunch of other voices, but I'm not. I mean, most of the, like, I don't know. I'm just being like, anything that's going to be interesting to a fan is maybe not going to be interesting to me, even if I'm a fan of the band, just because this is like my everyday too. Like, so it's like, hey, it's backstage here. You're like,
yeah, it's the office.
I've sat in that shitty room a bunch of times. Great.
Yeah. You kind of get almost in like Groundhog Day mode, don't you? After, well, you know, certainly months and months on the road, it must feel like I've lived this before.
Yeah, I mean, we try to keep it less long tours now. Try to keep it at like 3-ish and like 5-ish at the most weeks. But we used to do like 6, 7, 8. That's terrible.
Oh, it's a young man's game, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, we used to tour.
You don't want to be away from your family for that long. Let me ask you this, dude. What is the importance of Christmas to you as we get to almost Christmas time of year?
I really like Christmas.
Me too.
Just in general, there's some interesting things going on with, like, I think one of the most interesting things, it's the only, like, so music, you know, it goes in periods. You hear a new record and it kind of moves on and you'll go back to it. But Christmas is the only time of year we have these songs that live with you every single year and take on this ritualistic kind of quality. That's really interesting to me. So I really like Christmas music. I like that it's this, strange kind of cultural liturgy of, I mean, not religious, like, the Christian side of it, just like it's just this weird time where we all are festive about certain things. We have certain nostalgia, emotions, whatever. I mean, I know not everyone deals with that or experiences that, but a lot of people in the culture. So I find that fascinating, and I like the cold weather. I live in California, so it's never super cold, but I appreciate when it gets cooler there.
It's a funny time of year because you do find people are, I guess, more swept up in the magic of day-to-day life. They perhaps take more, I don't know, notice of little things. I find that. I find I get a bit, you know, saccharine and kind of, you know, sensitive. And
yeah, it's a bit of a weird mix because you have ultra-consumerism happening,
yeah,
as well as people taking note of those better, smaller, more tender moments. So I don't love the consumeristic part. I could do without all the presents and stuff, or like if there was just a rule, it's like something tiny or whatever, but it gets to be a huge focus, which I don't love.
What kind of a role has faith had in your life and your outlook on the world? If you had to try and break down what, a topic like that, as large and as all encompassing as it is,
yeah,
what it's meant to you.
Ooh, that's loud. So the way that I would see it is almost just like everyone has a worldview, a way, like a lens that you look out at everything, because it's all too complex for you to not have a framework to kind of put it in. Like your brain just naturally does this, even if you don't think about, I have this worldview. You got something that you're working with. And so for me, some sort of faith in God, and I grew up in Christianity, and that's always been a part of that lens. It's been blended with a bunch of other things. Like I look at my formative kind of growth as this mix of messages I was getting in Christianity and messages I was getting in punk rock. Like
which is a heady mix.
Yeah, and it's actually, well, it's corrective in certain ways, because it made me look at some of the stuff that was in the music and scenes that I was in. I was like, man, I don't think that's great. And then it made me look at Christianity and be able to pick out things that I think a lot of people around me weren't seeing. So there's absolutely an anti-imperial kind of thing happening throughout Jewish scripture and Christian scripture, and that gets lost because in the 4th century, it became the official religion of the Roman Empire, and so it became, it embodied empire after that. But almost everything else that's going on is anti-imperialistic. It's about taking care of the weak and everyone banding together in a beloved community. And so I was able to see that stuff better because punk rock was saying a lot of the same things, or a lot of the punk rock I was listening to. So when I look at faith, it's like it's part of a lens that is being crafted at any moment for how I'm seeing the world. And I've had various points of kind of deconstruction, reconstruction, the largest one being in the last 5 years or so. And that's been a really great thing for me. So yeah, I'm in a good spot. I'm much more comfortable with not knowing a lot of things than I ever was. So
I think that is perhaps part of the idea of spirituality, right? Is that idea that the more you know, the less you know, and that there isn't ever really the true answers that we seek, you know?
Yeah, well, okay, so next week, the episode 6 is going to be this guy, James Karras, on my podcast. So if that idea interests you, check that out. But he talks about this idea of there being systems of inquiry, and he would say religions essentially are that as well as science. And systems of inquiry, they are grappling with the mystery of everything that is. They're doing it in different ways, like science does it in a different way than religion would. But essentially, they're grappling with a mystery. But then these systems of inquiry spawn what he calls systems of belief. And those systems of belief are closed, and they have all the answers within. So like science can spawn like scientism, where it's this idea that everything that we need to know is within, can be had through using science or whatever. Or it can spawn a really closed off version of something that was initially comfortable wrestling, trying to name the mystery and whatever, you know, but never knowing that it can't ultimately settle it. It can't solve it. It turns into the system of belief and gets very rigid and dead. So I think it's a really helpful way of looking at that, because it helps you to not make the mistake that I think people like some of the new atheists like Dawkins and Harris make, where religion is just bad, and that it's not really the issue. It's the fundamental mindset where you become closed down to other ways of thinking and to the data at hand that is really dangerous at any given moment.
Do you identify as a Christian if you had to sort of summarize where you stand on your relationship to God?
I do. There are a lot of Christians that take issue with me saying that, but just because I view a lot of that stuff pretty differently than I did, and I'm not, like, I don't need to nail down the things the way, like, a lot of what Christianity has become is a very obsessed with assenting to certain doctrinal statements. That's the core of things. And I'm not super interested in that. I'm much more interested in something in process and motion and living, and being able to actually talk about things and hear. I mean, there's so many interesting things going on. I mean, I've always been kind of a theology nerd, but I've been opened up to whole new kind of worlds. That we have like liberation theology, which is like basically the people who have not been allowed to tell the story for a long time, from different races or cultures. Now they're being like, no, this is what we're seeing. And so coming back to those ideas of, you know, liberation, anti-imperialism, like you get a lot of stuff coming out of there. There's interesting stuff going on. And so I think, it feels to me like culturally we're moving past a moment where for a while it was like, you couldn't, I don't know. It wasn't easy to talk about faith because it was kind of broken into like, faith is everyone saying you got to say all these things and be really in this box. And then people are like, I don't want to be in that box, so I don't have faith. And it feels like there's this a larger movement of people being able to be like, hey, like, the mystery of everything that is something, right? Like we can all talk about that. Like we all live in the same world. We're all experiencing whatever this mystery is. Even if, you know, you're a strict atheist, you're still experiencing whatever the mystery is. Like, and we can dialogue about what that means, what it means to be human. And so we don't, I feel like you don't have to be as afraid to talk about spirituality. I think for a while it was like people who were like spiritual, that was like not taken seriously by either side almost. And that seems to be, maybe it's just cause it's where I'm swimming, but, it's an exciting place to be able to engage all different sorts of people and talk about, you know, what things might mean.
Did you study philosophy or theology or anything like that? Or is it just something that you've always preoccupied yourself with in your spare time, is trying to understand more, read more, learn more?
I'm kind of just a self-learner. So I only went to like a year and a half of college, but I'm always kind of reading this or that. And yeah.
Have you read a lot of the holy texts then? And have you compared a lot of different religious schools of thoughts and found things in all of them that speak to you and interest you? And
yeah, I mean, I don't want to claim like I'm any expert in anything, but I especially in the past couple of years, I've been finding a lot of, I mean, and this is not at all to take away from kind of the unique vision that different traditions have, but I think there's a lot more overlay than most people would be led to believe growing up in one of those traditions, I think, especially as you look at the mystic traditions from these various religious traditions, the mystics in each one seem to come to very similar answers. They seem to gravitate towards an idea of the interconnectedness of everything, everything being one and many at the same time. These ideas of the eminence of whatever is, like that it's close, that it's there. I don't know. So there's tons of stuff that end up lining up between, you know, whether it's like the Sufis and Islam, or there's Christian mystics, a lot of stuff in Hindu or Buddhist thought. So that's really cool, I think, to see in, or like something like, just general. I mean, Buddhism can, at its core form, can almost be thought of more of as a, like a philosophy than a religion, but the main idea that suffering is caused by desire, and that as you pay attention to what's going on inside yourself, like, I don't know. So like if I'm waiting in a line, I'm really annoyed. I'm like, gosh, I can't believe I'm in this stupid line. I'm suffering because I have this like strong desire to get to the front of the line or whatever. But if I just stop and say, well, what if I don't have that desire right now, or I don't feed into it? What if I just say, huh, I'm standing here and, the sun is out. It's a nice day. I'm able to appreciate, like, you know, the things that I have. I'm able to feel myself in my body in that moment. Like, and now I'm not suffering. I might be uncomfortable a little bit or whatever, but, it that idea is, foundational, like, to a lot of the stuff that I've been, I don't know, learning the past couple of years. And I mean, you're going to get a lot of this through any kind of mindfulness practice.
Yeah, I was going to say, and almost psychology as well. It's like just retraining your brain to think in a constructive and positive way rather than a negative. And
it can be as simple as that. And I, there's a lot of these insights, yeah, that have been known for a long time, and now we're kind of finding through neuroscience, like the way that they actually impact us, which is cool to see it connect in a scientific way.
I hope you don't mind me just keeping on pressing you on this, because I love it and it's fascinating. Do you think that God's up there and out there, or do you think it's in there, or a bit of both?
I would be...
outside or inside? All around or at the core?
So outside would be like classic theism, which is like a dualistic idea that like God's out there, the world's here, and God kind of breaks into the world at times. And then pantheism, a lot of like Hindu thought would traditionally be thought of as pantheism, where God and the universe are essentially the same thing. I would be roughly a panentheist, which is... I mean, it's kind of a paradoxical term, but the idea is that God is more than the world, and the world is somehow more than God, that the world exists in God, and God is inside of everything, is indwelling everything. So it leaves room for some sort of kind of I-thou personal relationship in some way, but it also means that, you know, God is in this table in a very real way, like that this all exists within God in some sense. And so that leaves room too for God to act in the world without impinging or intruding upon the natural order of things. There's a lot of ways to look at that, but yeah, generally I would be a both and kind of.
What about the link between music and spirituality? Obviously music being at the core of, you know, your life. Is that a relationship which you have explored or pondered on or a lot throughout your life, or do you look at them as very separate things?
Spirituality and music.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not one for making those kind of dichotomies or dualisms where they don't need to be. So I feel like everything is, I don't know. I don't think there's a lot of lines that are really there. Like, I think everything's spiritual in the same way that I think everything's political. Like you can't just say I'm not political. It's like every decision you make affects the rest of everybody else. So it's inherently about, you know, the politic, about society. And you can, you know, say, I don't want to deal with that process, but saying you don't want to deal with it is political itself. Like, you can't get away from it.
Do you find yourself, when you're creating, feeling a sense of oneship with the universe, like you are reaching a higher plane in that spiritual definition? Does music take you higher?
I mean, music is amazing, and it's one of the things that I think about a lot when I think about just the strangeness of life, like the fact that, and I know some of it is culturally constructed, and I haven't done a ton of research on this, but I still feel like there are somehow inherent relationships between these notes that affect us, that affect our bodies, and it's super weird. Like, I mean, it doesn't matter what conclusion you come to, it's still really, really strange. And I mean, a lot of anthropologists think that, you know, music, singing came before language, stuff like that.
Well, you look at things like Gregorian chants, mm-hmm. and the kind of emotions that things like that instill in such a profound way,
yeah,
in a physical way.
Totally. And there's stuff that's like so far outside, you know, your own culture context that at first you might not get how it works with people, but it has worked for a lot of people for a long time. So I think there's some of that that's just something strange is going on with that. So I think it's spiritual in that sense, in that it's definitely evokes the larger mystery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What was your relationship with the church that you were involved in? What drew you to, was it part of taking a break from music that drew you to want to explore another avenue and perhaps kind of engage with a body, if you will, outside of music in a way that could help give your life some purpose and direction and stuff? Like, what was the draw?
I mean, huge.
To wanting to get involved with that.
You're saying like during the hiatus of the band?
Yeah.
So
that was around the time, right?
A lot of it was kind of a broad set of reasons that I needed the break, but a lot of it was just that time my kids were small and it was really rough being on the road a lot. And then I also had some friends I knew that were at that church, and there's a lot of cool stuff going on, and I had the opportunity to engage in music there, which has been something that I'd been thinking about at the time, because I really have never liked any kind of like congregational worship music. Like, it's always bothered me on a bunch of different levels. And I was in church one day, and I felt like this feeling of like, well, if you think it sucks so bad, why don't you try to make it better?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like,
it's a legitimate thought process. All
right. And so I started writing some music that I thought was better in all the ways that I was annoyed at in a lot of the music out there. And there was a lot of people at that church. It was kind of there's a lot of messed up stuff about that church, but there's a lot of interesting cultural kind of stuff going on, and a lot of really, really cool musicians doing cool stuff. And I eventually was kind of overseeing and trying to, there's like a label we were doing, and basically it was poised to do a lot of really cool stuff. And then the powers that be there were constantly just not letting us do anything that was cool or that we were trying to do. So it was a mess for a variety of reasons, but some of the best people I've ever known were at that church and working at that church and trying to do good there despite a lot of bullshit. So,
well, I read into it that around the time you left was around the time pretty much like the attendance just massively dropped. And
well, there was a bunch of
like faith in that body had kind of gone out the window,
a bunch of stuff going on and concerns. And then I finally got some direct information that we had been being lied to, tried to deal with that with other, as I was a pastor there at the end, tried to deal with that with the other pastors. That got shut down, and then I left and told people, hey, they don't want to deal with this. This is what's going on. And then they finally looked into some of the stuff that was happening, and before the lead guy could be reprimanded, he bailed preemptively and was like, it's fine that I left. And then
the classic cut and run.
Yeah, and then the whole thing fell apart. So, yeah, it was a big mess, but, oops, sorry.
Did you then, cause you took all, I guess, your family out to the East, was it East Coast? It was based
no,
on
Seattle,
but it was still a, you know, a significant move from,
so I had a house before and now you don't have a house.
Right.
Stuff like that.
So you kind of, I guess, are you still rebuilding roots?
I mean, we're back, we moved back with, you know, where all our family and stuff is, but yeah, like I got priced out of the market after, like, I didn't own a home in that time and just couldn't. Yeah. So Southern California is just stupid housing market. So
I heard that so we have a thing in the UK called council tax, sorry. And I've heard that the equivalent of that in California is you pay a percentage on the property every year, even if you own that property, right? So if you own a property outright, whatever it's worth, you pay a percentage of that value every year as like local government tax.
Yeah. We call it a property tax.
I mean, that sucks. That's mad.
Yeah. And it's like most people don't own their homes outright, at least younger people. But yeah. So, but I would not live there unless all my family was there. It's too expensive.
Was it good getting the band back together for your peace of mind, state of mind?
It was good. And I mean, it was really good to take a break. But it was
as much of a good thing to take the break as to start again, I guess, because you get perspective and you get...
Yeah, I mean, I was burned out. I was just like, because we were just going so hard for so long and really no...
Break.
No break in there. Yeah. So we came back really refreshed and just reappreciating each other and what we get to do. And yeah, it was great. I mean, it's been a total blast being back doing it.
Well, that first record was such a just great political rock record as well. When you got back together, the first one that you put out, it seemed to take on a lot of what was going on at that time specifically. Was that important to you then? And is it still now to have a voice in?
Yeah, I mean,
in current affairs.
I try to write in a way that's, I mean, it's always a little bit different, but I'm definitely influenced by whatever's happening. in 2015 when we were writing that was just crazy, especially in the States. And I had no idea that all of this lay ahead. But yeah, so it reflected a lot of that. Yeah, there's just stuff about the kind of intense race stuff that was happening. There's drone warfare stuff. There's definitely a lot of political stuff on there, but I didn't intend for it to be a specifically political record.
It's just because that was the time you were going through.
Kind of. I mean, I think this the newer one, Palms, is I think it's even more connected to a lot of the stuff that's happening. It's just less, it's kind of getting more at like the root stuff rather than like the specific outworkings of whatever's happening.
Yeah, like time specific effects or.
Yeah, so it's dealing with, you know, instead of like this, I don't know, like something on To Be Everywhere might have been like specific imagery of like something happening in the streets or something. And then Palms is getting underneath of, you know, what's going on in our hearts as we. Other these people as we make an us versus them and stuff that. So
well, what's fucked up to me, and maybe you have some thoughts on this, is in the 60s you kind of had counterculture hippie and, you know, the kind of psychedelic movement. In the 70s you had punk, in the 80s you had hardcore hip-hop alternative, and then I don't know, the 90s seemed to me like with bands like Rage Against the Machine, System of a Down, that seems to be the last era of like really politicized, outspoken bands within rock music, at least. And in more recent times, it seems like, although the world we're living in is complete, you know, bedlam, that, you know, people with guitars aren't addressing these issues as much as they have traditionally throughout, you know, the history of that genre.
I think that's true, and I don't totally know why.
But you have noticed it.
Oh yeah, I've way noticed less bands.
It's weird, isn't it?
It is weird. The producer that we worked on the last two records with, Eric, he was encouraging, and this wasn't specifically about politics, but he was just saying in general, he feels like, he was encouraging me to like, he's like, use nouns, like write about things. Like rock has gotten so like airy and ephemeral and it's not, there's no one's saying anything almost. Like like words are happening, but there's not, no one's communicating a whole lot. Like almost like, you know, bad junior high poetry or something. It's like these
words
sound pretty.
Well, it's funny you say
pretty,
you don't engage with social media, and it seems to me now as bands spend all their time going on social media about issues rather than writing songs about them. Mm. And it's like you can send all the fucking tweets you want, but that's not going to change anything. Whereas you would like to think that a great song could perhaps change the way people think, the way they engage with the world,
well,
have a positive impact.
I think a lot of it is that I really like Twitter for a lot of reasons, even though there's a bunch of... there's a bunch of bad things that can happen there, but it's helped me to see a lot of different viewpoints on the world that I would never have been able to see otherwise. And I'm super thankful for that. But it's also, you know, like I can write and I have written tweets that are trying to say something really specific about something that's happening, and it's going to piss some people off. Other people are going to agree. It's not going to change a bunch of people's minds. I don't think, I don't know. I think sometimes you still just have to witness to what, you know, is happening. But a song goes deeper. It gets past defenses in a different way if you can do it well and can have like an actual lasting effect on how someone could. I mean, I believe that I have to, and I try to write that way.
Well, also music is, you know, it's here forever, isn't it? Whereas a tweet is, you know, kind of lost in the ether after a week. Unless you write something really controversial and then it resurfaces and you lose your job or something over it. But, you know, music is forever. And I still believe, do you still believe as a creator that music can indeed change the world in a positive, kind of actual, tangible, meaningful way?
Yeah, I do. I do in the sense that I believe that stories are super powerful. And I think musicians are storytellers, or can be. Not always, but I think it's a different way of telling stories that, and that can be super powerful. I mean, you go back to, you had, you know, in these tribes, and there was a, you know, the shaman, the storyteller, the, like that, that person was giving context and helping to, you know, shape meaning in that culture. And, you know, we have a very different kind of setup now, but I still think that's what musicians and other creators can be doing.
So. Do you travel a lot outside of touring? Do you get to spend much time in other pockets of the world and experience their way of life with your family? And because I know when you're on tour, you see all these places, but it's very much venue, hotel, bus.
Yeah, I mean, every once in a while, you get a day where you get to really take some stuff in. I mean, I definitely don't travel as much, not touring.
Because you travel for a living, yeah.
Stuff, yeah. yeah, but we, I don't know, with the kids and stuff, we like to, I think our traveling ends up being more about getting into nature and, you know, appreciating those connections. So it's a lot of cool, like, we're really big into, like, the national parks and stuff back in the States, so...
Yosemite and places like that.
Yeah.
I mean, America and especially the West Coast is so spoilt for stuff like that.
It's pretty amazing. And it's there, and it's easy not to take advantage of it being there. Or you can have, I don't know, people like Trump just trying to roll back all these protections that have been put in place over years and years. So that's been a bummer. But yeah, I'm a big fan of preserving those places.
I think it's almost impossible for me, at least, when I'm in places like that, and so you feel so connected to nature and the ancient nature of existence, mm-hmm. to not think that there's something, you know, bigger at work.
Yeah, and I think that feeling, it gets squashed by us trying, I think, a lot of times too hard to argue about what exactly it is. And just in those moments, if you can just realize, like, man, we're never going to fully know what that is. Like, you're not, and that's okay. You can still, you know, swim in that and be swept up in it and appreciate it. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I could ever land in a spot where I didn't feel that there's some sort of meaning or magic to everything. And it doesn't, I'm using that really broadly, but I mean, even if you just think about the fact that consciousness has evolved, like, that's real weird. Like, even if we're just making all the meaning, it's still there. Like, you know, it's, I don't know. It doesn't have to be, like, it can come out of the thing. Like, Alan Watts talks about, like, the universe, like, peoples, like an apple tree, apples, like, we come out of it. And, therefore whatever is amazing in us is coming out of something that's just part of everything. I don't know.
Are you an animal lover?
As far as like pets or just in
general? Well, just in general, because I was going to make the connection that, you know, whenever you see, like, say, a dog blissfully unaware of itself rolling down the street, and, you know, there is a clear differentiation between me and that puppy. And sometimes it's better the devil you don't know, and ignorance is bliss and things like this. And you do sometimes, I do anyway, look at perhaps a cat or a dog and go, oh, wouldn't it be great to be them for a day? They're always just stoked on life. But then I think with the consciousness obviously comes the struggle and the fight. And the internal demons and battles that we all face every day, you know, however big or small they are.
Yeah, I think the further the consciousness is, the you know, higher the highs, the lower the lows, kind of thing. So, I do love animals, and I think I've been noticing there's definitely a pushback from certain parts of society of kind of hating on people who are super animal people, like, oh, you just, you know, you like your dogs more than people or whatever it is. And I've started to really see that as a failure to understand what a gift animals are, to just have a different set of eyes into what it means to be alive and to be a part of everything. So I've actually come to really embrace, like, the, especially like online, there's just like a bunch of animal stuff. And I think it's great. I think it,
well, it's joy, right? It's pure joy.
Yeah, it's great. So yeah, I'm not cynical about that.
What do you see your role as you know, as a singer, as a frontman, as a musician? What do you see your role and place in the earth is in terms of spreading whatever you would hope to spread? Or do you see your role as a spreader of joy or hope? Or
I've always tried to spread hope. I don't know. I've never been one to wallow in whatever the bad thing is. I'm always, you know, trying to find a way out. And so sometimes that's me, you know, I'm writing to myself. I mean, usually it's that in some sense. So I'm trying to spread hope. I think, every song's getting at a little piece of something larger, you know, but I think with the music, especially of lately, and with the podcast, I'm trying to bring people together to build a bigger, better, loving community of humans in whatever small ways I can.
Tell us about a couple of the guests coming up on the show, and then we'll wrap and we'll let you get ready for your show tonight. How many have you got in the can?
I've got enough to get through this tour, because I wasn't sure just internet access and what rooms I was going to be in. So we've got Dr. James Karse, who I talked a little bit about earlier. He's a religious literature scholar, philosopher. He's got this really cool book he put out in the 80s called Finite and Infinite Games, and it's real short and kind of like head exploding. It's awesome. Who else is coming up? So Gerard Way one just came out. Spacing.
And what about dream guests as well, or people you have your sights set on that you would absolutely love to sit down and talk with and have on the show?
Neil Gaiman would be cool.
Yeah, amazing.
Who else? I have like a giant list of people, like, and it gets to Stephen King would be really cool. Who else? Neil deGrasse Tyson would be cool. And I'm hoping I maybe could actually get him at some point, because I'm about to interview someone that knows him.
That's the way you got to roll, my friend. I know the tricks. And then the more guests you get on, the more other guests are inclined to come on, because they go, oh, that guy's been on. Mm-hmm. All right, I must check this out. And then they go, okay, yeah, I'm in, I'll do it.
Yeah, I just don't know if it's going to be like the kind of thing where it's so diverse that people are like, what is happening over there? But
well, you know what you want to look at is doing it in runs, you know, so there's like clumps. So there's a few people of a similar kind of, you know, or you just want to hit them from
a rainbow of angles. Totally.
Well, all the best with it, man. It's a really interesting concept. It's outside of the kind of the generic normal, I think, musician interviewing other musicians format. You've already sort of set that stall early on.
I'm trying to definitely distance that. And there'll always be musicians on there, because I'll end up having those connections. And I like exploring, you know, the angle that I can get through lyrics with someone. Because each person, I mean, I'm definitely not a, it's people were noting as I was starting this, they're like, it's weird you're doing this because you're real boring in interviews.
people say that to you, what people you know.
I think I'm boring in bad interviews.
That's it. You strike me as a guy who, if the question isn't going to stimulate you, you'll give a very short answer, and then that's it, move on.
And it's not that I'm trying to be a jerk.
Life's too short.
I'm not good at doing that. I'm very bad at small talk. So I really like talking about interesting things. So I'm setting the agenda here. And so my strength...
To prove everyone wrong.
Well, my strength in, I think, doing the show is not that I'm the best at talking, but I think I have interesting angles on how to get at those good, true, and beautiful things in relation to whatever that person's already been doing and their life experiences. So that's where I put a lot of the effort.
Well, and an interview is only as good as, you know, the host makes it. So yeah. Hopefully this one hasn't been too bad for you.
That's been great. Yeah.
Dude, I really enjoyed talking to you.
Cheers.
All the best with the podcast with Fryce. What's going on in terms of another album? Is there going to be a release in the next couple of years on the horizon? Are you writing at the moment? Is there anything going on
outside
of the band as well?
With
yourself and solo stuff?
Yeah, me and my brother are doing a project that I don't know when we'll ever finish, but we go in little spurts working on that, so that'll be different than solo stuff or Thrice stuff. But I don't think we'll beat the next Thrice record out with that, but we're starting to work on new music for Thrice. But other than that, just the podcast has been a big focus. So it's carrythefirepod.com if you want to check it out, or Carry the Fire podcast on all those podcasting thingies.
Subscribe. On it.
Do it.
Nice one, dude.
Late night brakes, I hear the tires squeal. Red light can't stop, so I spin the wheel. My world goes black before I feel an angel lift me up, and I open bloodshot eyes into fluorescent white. Flip the siren, hit the lights, close the doors, and I am gone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.